go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Andy McCarthy, the famed former federal prosecutor turned pundit extraordinaire. Now you find him at National Review Online. You also will find his work at PJ Media, Fox News, and elsewhere. We're always grateful that you find some of his work here at Secure Freedom Radio. It's the high point of our week. Andy, welcome back. Good to have you with us as always.
Frank, great to be with you.
You have been writing with some regularity of late about a senator by the name of Rand Paul in connection with two aspects of his recent oeuvre, shall we say, one having to do with assigning blame for the rise of ISIS and the other having to do with the National Security Agency and its authorities. Talk about both, if you would, Andy.
Sure. I think as far as the National Security Agency's program, which the senator has now successfully killed, Senator Paul, I think, you know, he's made arguments that were frivolous from a constitutional standpoint, but he's managed to convince a lot of people that the program's a constitutional violation, and he's demagogued it to the point where he's got people convinced that there's spying on Americans going on, when in fact what's being collected, I guess I would point out this interesting fact. I get email and snail mail from the Rand Paul 2016 campaign. Now, I've never made a donation to Senator Paul before, and I presume they must have been able to find out who I was and think that I'm a suitable potential contributor some way. So I imagine, you know, he's no stranger to actual data mining on Americans. But I must say what the NSA is doing is not that. They don't even have your identifying information. It's just phone numbers in a data bank with usage patterns. And if the government wants to find out who you are beyond that and go further than just allowing the government to collect those records, they have to go to a court and get permission, which is, you know, what the civil libertarians say they want. So I just think the program has been completely misrepresented, but he has succeeded in killing it.
Let me ask you, Andy, if I could, about another piece of this. Of course, the House of Representatives has adopted legislation, and the Senate is expected to do something along the same lines, I guess. The House is insisting that it be identical to it. But the difference is that the laws, the statutes that have now been allowed to lapse, actually provided for a capability. The new statute that's supposed to take its place, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out today, may or may not exist, depending upon whether the phone companies decide to play ball. Is this not a kind of conceit on the part of the members of Congress who've been promoting it, that they're doing something about it when, in fact, they may not be doing anything at all?
There are 1,400 different telecommunication service providers throughout the country. So if you're going to let them be the repository of this of these records rather than letting the government keep them in a database, then whenever the government wants to get records, it's going to be in a position of having to go to multiple phone companies and telecom providers. That said, you know, there are some of them that are much more major than others. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to talk about yawning gaps in the coverage when we now know that the program, as it's been operating up until now, hasn't been collecting cell phone records, which is an awful lot of the traffic that we actually have in the country to begin with. So we've been dealing with a program that has critical gaps to begin
with.
But
Andy, I guess just to drill down, the question I'm asking is, if the phone companies don't hold the records and they're not obliged to by law, then doesn't this whole thing really come a cropper?
Yes. Right. The thing to remember about that is phone companies don't hold records for the government, right? They hold them for their own purposes. And, you know, when I was a prosecutor, I think this is still the case, they tend to hold them for about 18 months. It was always very frustrating, in fact, when you come across some piece of evidence and you want to get phone records from 2 years back and you can't. but you know, they have their own purposes for holding them. So I don't want to get too hysterical about the thought that, you know, you make the call on Tuesday and they purge the records by Friday. They can't function that way. So, you know, we do have some leeway here, but look, there's no substitute for having a government database that holds the records. And as long as they're not personalizing the information and it's strictly watched by the courts and Congress, then it's a very trivial intrusion on civil liberties under circumstances where it may help us map terrorist organizations, which is extraordinarily important.
I'm with you, needless to say. Very quickly, you were rather more favorably disposed, I think, towards Senator Paul's characterization of some of his fellow Republicans when it came to causing, well, I guess calling them to account about their policies with respect to Syrian rebels being armed and some of those arms turning up in ISIS's hands. Talk about that, if you would, Andy.
Well, I think that Senator Paul, again, goes too far when he says that the Republicans created ISIS. However, if he were to say that there were reckless bipartisan policies which have contributed significantly to the rise of ISIS, I don't think that that statement would be disputable. And, you know, obviously ISIS is caused by Islamic supremacist ideology, just like Al-Qaeda, which ISIS sprung from, is. But, you know, look, the Obama administration has pursued policies with the support of Beltway Republicans that were designed to empower Islamists at the expense of regimes that were supporting the United States in counterterrorism, including in Libya. And, you know, we aided and trained and armed, or at least assisted in the aiding and training and arming of people who were very hostile to the United States. That's simply a fact.
And one of them has just thrown his hat into the ring, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Andy, let me turn quickly in the closing minutes with you to something that the Supreme Court handed down yesterday, a ruling concerning whether a woman working for or applying to work for Abercrombie & Fitch can wear her hijab as an expression of her piety. What did you make of this, the 8-1 ruling, and how this fits into the larger issues that you've been addressing so well in your various books, Willful Blindness and The Grand Jihad among them, in terms of sort of that manifestation of Sharia adherence, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think, Frank, though, that, you know, I've always said that we don't want to be France, where they have banned the burqa, right, in a lot of public areas. And what I've always thought about this is that the key here is exposing Islamic supremacist ideology and these Sharia tenets that are antithetical to democracy. I think if you could talk about this and shed light on it and get it into the light of day, the beliefs of the Sharia supremacists would be shown to be so extreme that they would be marginalized in the society. And if that happened, then I don't think we would care much. If a woman wanted to wear a veil, then she could wear a veil. I mean, who cares? The important thing is to recognize that there's a Sharia encroachment on our public political space and a threat to things like our free speech rights and our national security. If we got that, if we were able to have that debate openly without, you know, being smeared as Islamophobes and marginalize the people who are behind this movement, then I don't think anybody would care if a devout Muslim wanted to, you know, dress in a conservative fashion, just like Catholic nuns do, or whatever else. I don't think anybody would have a problem with that.
From your lips to God's ears, let's hope that comes to pass. You've certainly been leading the charge in exploring and demanding such a debate, Andy, and we appreciate you doing it here from time to time. We'll talk with you, I hope, again next week, and to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.